Hey, everybody. Good morning. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio, our second show today of August 18th, 2020. So thanks for being with us today, or maybe you're listening on the archives. That's okay. That's what podcasts are for. Okay, listen at your convenience. We archive everything over at our website, which is education-talkradio.org. We put a new schedule up every Saturday over there. Please join our Equity Consortium. We work hard at that. We really do. We publish our magazine, Equity in Access. It's an online journal, a journal available on-site at the Equity Consortium website. Please join. It is for educators. All right, it's free. We have a wonderful magazine. We want your voice heard. We're going to talk about equity on today's show. So join our consortium, the American Consortium for Equity in Education, over at ace-ed.org. And you can link in with us, by the way, over at Larry Jacobs on LinkedIn, on Facebook. It's both Larry Jacobs and Education Talk Radio, and on Twitter, it's EduTalk. It's at EduTalk, and it's actually funny that every one of them is different. I don't know why I did that, but I did. Kosen is with us today. We have a good show with them. We're going to talk. I love talking about equity, obviously. Okay, we have their Equity at Scale report. We've got some wonderful guests today from there. Some of them have been with us. Others have not. I'll introduce them all to you, but it's going to be an interesting show talking about equity with the folks at the Consortium on School Networking. Cheryl, are you there? Cheryl Williams?
I am. Hey, Larry. Well,
how you doing, Cheryl? Welcome back.
Thank you. Pretty hanging in there.
Yeah, we all are hanging in there. That's exactly right. Hopefully, we'll all be hanging in there for quite a while. It's crazy times. We'll talk about that. Ed, are you there?
I am. Thank you.
Hey, Ed. Welcome back to the show. Ed?
Yes. Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, well, I said welcome back to the show, and it's nice to have you here again.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Yep. You're quite welcome, sir. You're from Hampton Township School District in Pennsylvania, out on the other side of the state from where I grew up. I grew up in Philly. You're near Pittsburgh. I forgive you for that. New guest, Rebecca Cunningham. Hi, Rebecca. It's Larry here.
Hi, good morning, Larry. Thank you so
How
much
you?
For having us. We really appreciate it. I'm well, thank you.
My pleasure, Assistant Superintendent of Hampton Township School District. Okay, as I say, the wrong side of Pennsylvania, but I forgive you.
Thank you so much. We appreciate
You're
that.
You're welcome. Home of the Steelers.
That's okay. Our superintendent's from Philadelphia.
There you go. There you go. Where do you go to? Where do you go to high school? Do you know?
I'm not sure about that. Yeah.
Tell them I went to Overbrook in Philly. Okay. Do that for me.
Absolutely will do.
Thank you. Do that. Okay. We'll find out where he went. And I taught at Cheltenham. He may know that district as well. Okay. Rebecca, tell us all about Hampton School District out near I almost said Philadelphia, out near Pittsburgh.
Right. Thank you so much. We are a smaller school district. I am very proud. We're the Hampton Talbots, and we're a smaller school district, one township, one school district outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. It's a K-12 public school district. We have three elementary schools, one middle school, and one high school. And we are very excited to reopen school here under different circumstances
that.
Than what we had last year. But some of the defining characteristics of our school district is that we have an outstanding team. It's a very nimble school district, and we have an amazing community of learners and parents and guardians that really are leaning in to help us have a massive move here in another week or so. So thank you.
That is wonderful. And, boy, are you right that it's a different school opening than not only last year but the 800 years before that. Okay, it really is, minus the years of the Black Plague, which you guys were not a school district during that. Okay, and what did you say the team name was? Did you say the Calverts?
So the mascot for the school district is the Talbot, T-A-L-B-O-T. It's an extinct English hunting dog, but I think we're the only school district in the United States with that mascot.
You don't have to think that anymore. I think you can actually go to sleep each night and know that. Okay, the Talbots, right? The Fighting Talbots?
Yep, that's
okay.
Us.
Before we go further, I want to talk about equity, but where did that come from? I mean, was that like the founding family of Hampton? the Talbots?
I believe it does have some roots in the founding families of Hampton. I believe there was a judge that sort of founded this part of our district, and they were looking for a mascot, and that's the one that they selected. So it's a little unique and interesting and different.
It is. I can only imagine that meeting. How about we go? Yes. Yes, go ahead, Ed.
I was going to say, it's funny, when some of our students study go abroad, they'll find over in Europe the Talbot will be on pubs and things like that. So, like, it's more readily known over in Europe, I guess, from those origins of it. But, yeah.
That's pretty cool. I can only imagine a meeting where they said, all right, let's look for an extinct British hunting dog and name the teams after that. I think that's interesting.
It's
kind
part
of a roundabout.
It was on the family seal there back in the day. Yeah.
Wow. That's it. The Talbots. Thank you. The Hampton Talbots. Oh, right. I love it. Is it Hampton High School? Is that the name of the school? High school?
Yes. Hampton High School.
Yeah.
So the Hampton High School Talbots. I love this. Okay. I love this. Cheryl, what do you think of the Talbots? I'll get into equity in a minute. What do you think, Cheryl Williams?
You know something, Larry? I mean, the thing about talking with you is I always learn something, and I just learned a whole bunch about the Talbot,
the
Talbot school district. Talbot and the Hampton district, yeah.
Well, there we go. Okay,
the learning activity.
And it's virtual. It's virtual. See, we can all learn virtually. There you have it. Speaking of virtual, okay, I'll let Rebecca answer this. How are you opening schools, Rebecca? What's going on, obviously, next week or the week after?
Oh, yeah, it's been a great challenge, but we've been all able to pull together to take some direction from our health organizations and also from our educational organizations. And so we're opening under a hybrid model, in which case 50% of our students will be attending in-person Monday and Tuesday. 50% of our students will be attending Thursday and Friday. Everyone will be learning from home on Wednesday virtually. And we also have options for our K-12 students to take a completely remote learning opportunity.
Wow.
And so we are trying to be very flexible and responsive to our students and our parents' needs. And so there's obviously a lot of professional development that's coming to our teachers in the next couple of days as we plan to open for the students on the 27th.
Well, how cool. I wish you best of luck with that. It's very similar to – I live in Maine now, and it's very similar to what we're doing up here, okay? And I certainly hope the plan works, quite obviously, okay, and that everybody – two questions. Is Wednesday going to be used to clean the schools? What happens on Wednesday inside the buildings?
Yes, absolutely. So while the students and the teachers are not in the buildings, we're going to be doing a lot more deeper cleaning through our buildings, our high-touch surfaces, to ensure that things are clean and fresh and safe for our students, the second group of students who are coming on Thursday, Friday, and then additional cleaning over the weekends to ensure that we're ready for our Monday guests.
And another question, who will be teaching the students that are at home? Okay, when 50% of the kids are in school. So you got half the kids there Monday, Tuesday. That means half the kids are home Monday, Tuesday. Who's teaching them? Right? That's a question that's come up a couple of times on the show. I'm just curious what you guys are doing
about
it.
Yeah, it's really an excellent question, and it'll be our Hampton teachers who are our employees and certified by the state of Pennsylvania who'll be doing that work. And it's such a great challenge and a great opportunity to really stretch and grow our professionals as they'll be working not only with the students that are in front of them in a smaller group, but also working with our students who are at home. And so this is going to be a new adventure, I think, for all of us to see how to continue to make excellent progress for our students, regardless of whether they're in person in front of us or they're at home working in that capacity. So we're very excited. We have outstanding teachers and principals, and so we're really looking forward to this work, and we're really embracing this as a good challenge and an opportunity.
Ed, thank you for seeing it as an
opportunity. What you might have seen, a few cases where students that had illnesses and things in the past learned via an educational robot, you know, with a video conference, an iPad in classroom or something like that, where they could video conference in. We flipped that concept and we put an iPad on a mobile stand in every classroom. So while the teacher's teaching, they can have basically a two-way video conference with kids at home or here, but they're going to deploy a variety of methods, not just synchronous video, you know, kind of stuff. while the kids are out. Yeah.
That is great. God bless COSIN and all the ed tech stuff they do. Good job, Ed. I love that. And that's a good one. I've heard of that before, but I haven't heard it in the context of the COVID reopening. So I'm really proud of you. That is good, good stuff. Cheryl, what are you hearing just generally? Before we get into the equity thing, I do want to talk about it. But what are you hearing just generally as you plow your way through COSIN?
Well, you know, it's funny, Larry, as I was revisiting the report that we created from our visit that I know we're going to dive into a little bit, but it just seems like a whole different world. I mean, what we learned there was really important, but it almost feels like we have to put it on the shelf until life is normal again. But one of the several things strike me about the situation now. As you know, I'm retired from full-time work and doing these project-based things. But it strikes me as we hear this blather at the national level from politicians who don't know squat about how schools
That's
run.
Right.
And as I listen to Ed and Rebecca talk about the real complexity, even in normal times, the complexity of running a successful school district. So it strikes me, you know, the same way as when we were doing No Child Left Behind and all teachers had to be evaluated by standardized test scores, how people who don't understand how these institutions run can make a lot of blathering things that aren't helpful. So that's observation number one. Observation number two, I've been told, is, you know, the religious schools, primarily the Catholic schools, are opening full-blown. That this has really been good for their business because there are people who can afford to, who are sending their kids back to school because then they can afford to pay for the tuition. So it's just, talk about equity, and who knows what will happen with those situations.
That's
I
right.
have. Yeah, I have a grandson whose parents have made that decision, and he tells me because they think he's a kid that needs to be in somewhere outside
mm-hmm.
of the household. He tells me he wears a mask and a shield. So it's those kinds of things that have struck me in this crazy time we're going through as someone
it is crazy,
you know,
yep.
back in. So
it is the crazy time. I hadn't heard that yet about the Catholic schools, and I don't think really and truly everybody's. I'll say this just blanket. Everybody's trying. We just work
right.
with what we have, and we have an obligation for safety first. We saw what happened last week, I think it was, in Georgia, when they reopened some of those school districts too quickly, and a lot of people came down with COVID or at least tested positive for it. So we got to be really, really careful. So I think what you guys are doing is the right thing, and I remind you, Rebecca and Ed, I hate to say it, but it's a temporary plan. This is the way you're going to reopen. Let's hope it lasts. It may not last. We'll see what the see what happens, right, Rebecca? We'll have to see what happens. That's all there is to it.
That's right. Right.
Yeah.
I think the strength is in the team and being able to be nimble in order to respond to our challenges. So I
Absolutely.
Completely agree with you.
Absolutely. It's just wild out there. And you know,
no
go
one
ahead,
else,
Beth.
Rebecca, I think this is also a case where a district of your size can be more nimble than, say, Montgomery County, Maryland, where, you know, 180,000 students in all the buildings and just the sort of logistical challenges. So it's just, I think it sounds terrific what you guys are heading into.
That's why,
Thank
exactly,
you.
If I
that.
May, and take this as a compliment, Rebecca and Ed, that's why the cockroaches outlasted the Tyrannosaurus. Okay? They were nimble and quicker. Okay? Just keep that in mind.
I'll keep that in mind.
I don't want you to take the cockroach thing too much, but it's true. The more nimble you are, just go with it and do the best you can, and you'll last 180 million years. That's all there is to it. Okay?
Gosh, Larry, I didn't know this was a science lesson, too.
There you go. That's why people tune in, so they can hear my these excellent science. Lessons. Okay. Okay. And you know, let me just segue into this. This is something. Describe if you can. I don't know if Ed wants to do this or Rebecca, but let's use Campton as an example. Is the district a wealthy district? Does it have a lot of free and reduced lunch? What's the demo of the district? I'm leading to an equity question or the ruralism of the district, whatever.
I think I would characterize our district as more suburban outside of Pittsburgh,
okay.
Pennsylvania. And we don't have our free and reduced numbers in just yet, but usually we're in the teens somewhere.
Okay, it's low.
But I think that because, but I think that because our school districts and our schools are of a good size for education, I think that allows for a lot of personalization with our administrators, our counselors, and our teachers, and it enables to really interact with our students and our families because of the size. I was sort of echoing what Cheryl was saying a little bit before. And I think that's one of the greatest strengths of being a smaller and a more nimble district is that you're able to really interface with your community and your students and your teachers a lot more easily.
You sure are. And describe. Go ahead, Ed. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, and with the current, we're primarily a residential community, but with all the current pandemic and job issues, you know, we have some people that are still at work, but a number of people that are really struggling now. So we've had to make some adjustments there as well to some of our programs and things.
Right. And did you have an equity problem in terms of remote learning? And I should say a challenge. Was every kid able to get online? Did every kid have a device? Did you have challenges like that, Ed?
Sure. So in the spring, because of when the pandemic first really kind of took hold, we did have a few challenges because we found that people that typically never complained or never had issues with their internet access, it was because they were going to, you know, restaurants or coffee shops and other places for their internet access. And then when the schools closed and those facilities closed, and they had to be at home 24/7, they found that their internet at home was no longer adequate because they were just using a cell phone or they found the types of broadband learning and stuff we needed. So we had to help some families. Not a huge percentage because of the way our community is designed. We were very fortunate that we have already been one-to-one for a couple of years now. So we've kind of resolved those issues early on, fortunately. But we found that there was a handful of people that really needed some help, and we tried as best we can to facilitate that. Fortunately, some of the providers were being quick to extend services and things like that. But we didn't have nearly the same problems that some other districts had.
Wow. I'm glad to hear that. And, it's frightening what some other districts had to deal with, and I'm so glad that the people of Hampton Township did all right with that. Did you guys in December, you went up to Ontario, right, Cheryl? You were the leader of the COSIN group?
We chose the most wonderful time to go. We went the week after Thanksgiving, and as you know, that's a great time to visit Toronto. It was cold and snowy.
Yes.
We didn't go for the weather, but that was when we went, and there were 14 of us in the delegation, and we were joined by some of our corporate supporters while we were there, and just had a fabulous, a fabulous visit with, the connection had come to COSIN through Michael Fullen and through the sort of regular convening and outreach that COSIN does in the international community and in monitoring the PISA scores to see where in the world are people doing things so that they improve. And that was how Ontario was chosen. And the two school districts we visited were Toronto and York Region. Toronto's the largest district in the province, and York Region, I think, is the third largest. They're both mega districts, well in the six figures of students. And Michael Fullen joined us also for a symposium. So
what'd you learn?
So that was where
we met. Learn? Yeah, what'd you learn from them? And Rebecca, I got to ask, Rebecca, did you go up there on that trip?
Yeah, I did. Actually, my flight, because of the timing of the and the weather, my flight was canceled. So I just got up and drove the next morning, and I joined them a little bit later. But from Pittsburgh
That's
to
cool.
Toronto.
Can't do that these days. Okay, and Ed, you went too, right?
Yes. We have some friends that actually teach in some of the school system up there. And I actually brought my family up early. I went up a little bit early, so I didn't run into the weather problem. But we met with them and viewed things, did some stuff over the weekend, and then I went right into the delegation while they returned home kind of thing.
Cool. So what you learn from, I'm going to ask this simple, why is it called equity at scale? And what did you learn up in Canada? I'll go back to the leader, Mademoiselle Leader, Cheryl.
Well, one of the things we learned was that, you know, the emphasis is not necessarily on technology, which, of course, those of us who've been advocating for the appropriate use of technology have been talking all the time about that. They weren't really focused on one-to-one, but we sort of distilled down three really focuses that we came away with. We have a debrief after our visit and come up with what are the themes that really hit us, as, you know, the most impactfully. And that was their inclusive design, the way they really recognize the diversity of their population, and it is very diverse. And we can talk about that.
It is.
As well as the fact that they sit on indigenous lands that weren't theirs in beginning, and they acknowledge that. Their deep learning, it's cyclical deep learning process that has very much been influenced by their work with Michael Fullan. And then their courageous leadership around really, I mean, you know, the superintendent, John Malloy, focused on, he said, okay, so we know 71% of our students meet, you know, on standardized tests meet what they're supposed to know. So great, but we concentrate on those 29%. And so anyway, that's the overarching thematic things we came away with. But I'll let Ed and Rebecca sort of drill down.
Ed, Rebecca, drill down.
I think one, you
I'll
know,
let
the,
go
the
first on that.
Oh, Ed, so kind. I think, you know, the question that we started with was, how do you continually improve such a massive school system with such a diverse community? And those takeaways that Cheryl mentioned was exactly what we had distilled and that were their key focus areas. But I think one other part that resonated with me was their overarching vision and their goals, which is their goals were really on equity, achievement, and well-being. And certainly well-being has been at the forefront of a national conversation now.
That's right.
But it
That's
was
right.
really something that they had been focusing on for quite some time. And this included the well-being of the students and the faculty, the staff, their administration, and their local communities. And so it was really refreshing to see that those were three huge areas that they wanted to continually focus on as their overarching goals of the equity, but also the achievement, of course, and then the well-being.
Well, did you feel, when you see all that, because if I had asked you, and because you guys are a good district, if I had asked you those questions in November, you would have said you're looking at all those things. So somewhere along the line, you must have seen something in what they're doing that, I'm going to say it this way, was missing or whatever, or you could do better or something like that. And I'm going to use Hampton as the example. We could extrapolate that out to every district. Okay. Well, what did you see that really just struck you that, well, we've kind of missed this a little bit? Rebecca or Ed?
Well, I know for me personally, like we've had a focus here on deeper learning and different ways to achieve that, and being flexible learning environments, where I've added, like for me being the director of technology, I always look at what can I put in place that will help with flexible learning experience and how to use technology to help personalize instruction. And that's what I found was the opportunity to meet with Michael Fullan, who's an expert in deeper learning, and seeing that they've been doing extensive work, to hear it from the horse's mouth and kind of see it in person is opportunities I always try to look for when I participate in these delegations. So and how others do it, you know, and what, you know, what you can learn from each other. But seeing how they're focused on deeper learning and being flexible and how that can help personalize instruction with the personalization aspect of things, especially when they have some underlying technologies to help power that. If no matter where your kids are from, you know, in terms of diversity, if it's being personalized, that instruction is helping all of them individually. But then your organization as a whole is also benefiting. So you can help scale that and those learning experiences. And I see that being the future of learning around the world as we were more connected, you know, and things like that. So being able to see that firsthand from them and see how they do it on scale versus, you know, our smaller organization and what ways we can learn from each other was valuable to me.
Yeah, and Canada does a great job. I'm a little familiar with Alberta. Canada, and I know they do a great job. And just so you guys understand, they have this equity thing where they give every student has an extremely rigorous curriculum, but the rigorous curriculum is based on general standards that everybody has to do, but the curriculums are kind of by school. Who's in that school? Is it African-American kids? Or it would be Canadian, African-Canadian kids up there, okay? It would be Indigenous peoples, whatever. They make that curriculum really relevant, okay, to these kids, but they make it very rigorous. They find that the kids literally spark up and do this. It has to do a lot with equity stuff. I've been working a lot with Johns Hopkins, so I've heard about all this. And I have to ask, Cheryl, when you call this equity at scale, what do you mean by that?
Well, I think what we mean, and I'll let Rebecca and Ed chime in too when I'm done,
okay.
is that it's a culture. It's a culture around
which
they.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. So that it's like the overarching culture for the decisions they make that then is infused in all of their relationships. For instance, one of the programs that I thought was really effective was their Digital Lead Learner program, where they have teachers who volunteer to become experts. You know, sort of the way Ed is, although I'm sure it's difficult to get them. On how to use different technologies in instructional ways. And then they are mentored for a couple of years, and then they become, and this is all volunteer, then they become leaders to recruit others to come in and learn the skills that they've learned. And so it really breeds a collegiality amongst the professionals that then focuses on everybody having the tools to meet the needs of students who come from very diverse backgrounds. I was really one of the things that impacted my observation was how wonderfully diverse these schools are, and I don't just mean that they have African, I think we can't call them African Americans because it is still part of America, but anyway, not just African Americans, Asians, Middle Easterners, a huge panoply of different, and then of course they're Indigenous people.
Sure.
So I think that's sort of the overarching thing that helps them to keep thinking in terms of equity at scale. But I don't know, Ed and Rebecca, what
do you think? We'll start with Rebecca. Rebecca, what do you think? Say, take the phrase equity at scale and put it into action of what we're talking about here.
Absolutely. Thank you. I think one of my key takeaways with equity and thinking about such a massive school district or school system is that they were really broke equity down into equity of access for their students and their faculty and staff. Equity of opportunity was really important to them, and then also equity of experience. And so thinking about how to personalize the curriculum and the activities and the learning for students really focused not only on access but also their opportunities, and so removing barriers for students, and then to ensure that they had an experience that was commensurate with what they needed and how they learned and where they wanted to grow.
Right, that's really interesting. That is really interesting. Ed, what's your thoughts?
Well, yeah, I think that along those lines, with the diversity focusing on things, they had an approach to, in terms of how they design instruction to be inclusive. So they it's an inclusive design kind of concept where they had that commitment to ensure that as they design lessons and activities and that they're basically reaching, regardless of students' language, you know, their cultural backgrounds, ethnicity, and socioeconomic kind of status, that those things aren't, they can focus on that and allow everybody to collaborate regardless of those types of things where
exactly
typically
what I was
sometimes
saying.
You'll see things that are funneled in.
Yeah.
So they're very thoughtful about the design process there.
That design process means a lot, okay? And if you design your curriculum right, okay, and use all those technological tools, et cetera, you will have every single kid totally engaged in their learning, okay, which makes a big difference, by the way, with remote learning right now. The more we can engage kids, the better off we are. This is really – you guys really learned a lot up there, okay? How long were you up there, okay? Cheryl, how long were you up there?
Oh, we were. Oh, thank, I'm sorry. Yes, we were up there. Well, we arrived on a Monday and we were done on Friday. So we had two full days in the school districts, and then we had a the final day was an all day symposium that Michael Fullen helped us with, and along with the folks from the districts, to really not only process what we'd seen, but also to just discuss, you know, where they were going from here. So it was a full week. It was a jam-packed.
That's great.
And the things that really really stuck with me was as we, of course, visiting the schools was the most fun. It is for me, particularly since I don't have that opportunity much anymore as a retired person. But was just this obvious collegiality amongst the professionals in the building, and how they work together in teams. And how they were focused on what was best for the kids in that building. So,
You brought up something interesting. I'll go back to Rebecca. Rebecca, a Canadian school is a different country. We may not sometimes think so, but it is a different country, okay, and a different culture, if I may. Did you get a feel for a difference between an American school and a Canadian school, or are they pretty much similar? Rebecca, I'm going to ask Ed the same thing, but what was your thoughts just on those nuances of difference?
I think there were a lot of similarities. I mean, there's obviously a school brick-and-mortar structure, and you can approach a school and see playgrounds and children running around outside, and they're grouped by grade level in classrooms, and they're working primarily with one or two adults in that learning space. And a lot of the students had access to technology, and there was, learning activities that were progressing from one part to another that were matched to a curriculum with learning outcomes. And there's obviously some ways for them to ascertain the students' progress as they go. So I think you'd probably find that in just about any American school here as well. I think what was different for me is just how large the school districts were that we visited.
Wow.
The Toronto district has 246,000 students, and York region has 128,000 students. And so trying to look at that system from just an organizational perspective was quite interesting, because, you know, whereas we may have one person to do a department of work, they may have 30 or 40 people to do that work, and that's important because they have so many schools that are they're accountable to. And so it was very interesting from an organizational perspective to see those internal and external feedback loops that they have to continually improve their schools, and how they communicate with their building level principals, and how they communicate with their communities. So similar in terms of goals and structures, but different in terms of complexity and organizational comprehensiveness.
But you can all accomplish the same thing if you put some of these efforts into it. Ed, what did you find as the big differences? It's true. What did you find, Ed?
So fortunately, I've been able to go on several delegations around the world with COSIN. I always find it interesting to see how, like, I always like seeing the classroom visits and seeing the creative ways and engaging ways teachers use technology for learning and those tools. And it's funny how many global companies we have, and it's the same tools being used with different cultures. But they also have scale challenges. So, like, population shifts in our community here, there's not a lot of land left to build on. But occasionally we get a new neighborhood, you know, with 30 houses or 20 houses, you know, type of thing. And that creates a little bit of an enrollment shift for us in terms of who can be placed where and how class sizes are. But when you see the amount of growth in some of their areas where they're talking about having to rapidly build a whole new school sometimes because of the amount of housing and population shifts in certain areas. So how they rapidly deal with that and transportation issues and things like that that come into management of school districts. But I always like seeing, like, it's funny, the one example I saw was in a biology class we visited, and they were using Tinkercad, Minecraft, and maker tool, you know, craft tools like styrofoam and paint to do detailed cellular models. So the kids had a variety of choices, and they were on their own devices. So it was a bring-your-own-device model where some kids were on phones, some kids were on computers. And they were just all manipulating those tools to really learn about those cellular structures and the parts of the cell. But those are very similar. So those learning things that we have, but how we use tools in those companies that globally, it's the same tools we're using here. And I've seen that again in Europe and in Singapore with COSIN, where we use a lot of the same tools just in different ways. So it's neat how we're so connected, but we're so apart at the same time sometimes.
It's really interesting. You take the best of everything. Cheryl, where can people see the full report?
On the web, but can before I go there, say that one of the biggest differences in the school systems in the provinces in Canada, we probably didn't see, because there were 72 school districts in Ontario. We saw two of them, and we saw two of the English school districts. So they have French school districts, where it's French language school districts, and they have Catholic school districts. So all of them are publicly supported. And the other thing that's different, and it was interesting when you were talking about Alberta, because there's no national Department of Education. So I don't think we learned, and I don't know, Ed and Rebecca can correct me if I'm wrong here, how the provinces share information with each other. That wasn't.
That's a good question. That's a good question.
So those are the things that are really different from our system, and I think Ed and Rebecca have really pointed out, you know, from their standpoint, what were new experiences for them.
Right, and it's interesting. The provincial government does support, let me say it this way, equally all religious schools. I use Catholic as an example. They absolutely do. But I have to say this, any textbook or learning that is strictly Catholic, it's like you're learning catechism or something, okay, that's done by the school and the community, not the provincial government.
They're all in French,
but they're held to the same standards. Okay,
right, exactly.
And it's a very good system. Okay, and it seems to be working very well. And you talk about equity, that's I think, a very important aspect of it. All great stuff. We have to go. You guys are wonderful. Okay, Rebecca and Ed, good luck with the reopening of school. It's going to work out. Okay, it's going to work out. Okay, so good
luck.
Thank
you, Larry. We certainly appreciate it. Thank you for the opportunity to meet with you today.
Well, thank you for bringing your expertise to the audience. And Cheryl, as always, wonderful to have you here.
It's always wonderful to talk with you, Larry. Thank you.
Thank you. Both of you, stay safe, please. Have a good day. Okay, thanks again. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, Cheryl Williams. By the way, I didn't give her a real introduction. Former interim CEO for ISTE, and prior to that, she was the executive director of Learning First, the Alliance of the Associations. And the person who followed her in that job, Rich Long, will be my guest on Friday. Cheryl's wonderful, obviously. Okay, and then Rebecca Cunningham and Ed McCavany from Hampton Township School District in Pennsylvania near Pittsburgh. We'll archive the show at education-talkradio.org. Please follow us on Twitter over at EduTalk Radio. Join our Equity Consortium. That's what we talk about at ace-ed.org. Do it. Do it today. Thanks for listening.